Doctor, for inviting you here. I'll likely have a postdoctoral position opening in my lab soon. I think you'd be a strong candidate. Would you be interested?
Lightning flashed off to the east. It struck somewhere out beyond the city, flickered for a moment, lit up the sky. I'd be honored, he told her. Can you tell me more about your lab's direction?
I have three goals.
Shu ticked them off with her fingers.
One, direct brain-to-brain communication. Two, boosting human intelligence to superhuman levels. And three, uploading human minds to machine systems.
Cade blinked.
This surprises you?
She asked. He nodded. I love the goals, but what about the law? The Copenhagen Accords? Shu held his gaze.
Laws and treaties change. Those restrictions will end one day. We'll be ready.
Cade felt her again then. Hints of the future. A time when their work would be unfettered. When they could be free to improve upon the human mind. To expand themselves. Uplift themselves. Take the next steps in human evolution. Her vision of a future human was sublime. He ached for it. He ached to become it. And as she projected this vision, he could feel her mind searching for his. She was reaching out, trying to draw him in. Her Nexus node sent out affinity pings, looking for complementary nodes in his brain. Cade felt a ripple of it across his mind. The Nexus nodes in his brain resonated in response to Shu's pings, primed to respond, held in check by Nexus OS and by Cade's force of will. He could not let her see why he was here. He tried to act natural. I'm impressed by your vision, Dr. Shu. I admire that you're doing this work to be out ahead of the game. Shu raised her cup of tea to her lips, took a sip, closed her eyes momentarily to savor it.
Yes, she said. It's always good to be out ahead.
She did something then that Cade didn't understand. New pings emanated from her brain, in a pattern too fast and intricate for him to follow. Colors and shapes flickered in his mind. For a moment he didn't know what had happened, and then he felt the change, saw the errors. Starting somewhere near his midbrain, sets of Nexus nodes had dropped out of his control, were starting to broadcast a pattern of their own, against his will, and it was spreading. He flicked on one of the defenses that Rangan had created. Activate Aegis. Firewalls blocked out all external signals, descending like massive blast shields over his thoughts. Watchdogs activated, isolating the misbehaving nodes in his brain, inundating them with kill signals.
Stay cool,
he told himself. He smiled calmly back at Su Yong Shu. More errors flashed across his vision. Watchdogs were faltering. Nodes in his mind were reaching out to touch Shu's. Their pattern was spreading within his mind. More and more nodes were rebelling, reaching out to Shu. The power of their broadcast was ratcheting up from microwatts towards milliwatts. Could she hear it yet? He had to stop it before she could. Cade pulled up the radio firewall's interface, flipped a switch to block out the signal coming from his own brain. It didn't make a difference. The foreign signal continued to spread within his brain, reaching out to Shu's. Nexus OS was faltering now. Errors were piling up. His Nexus nodes were becoming Shu's. He was losing. His blast shields were crumbling. Nexus nodes in his brain were starting to synchronize with nodes in Shu's. He could feel bits of her mind touching his. Vast and majestic, that's how she felt. He was fast running out of options. He would need to halt everything in his head. System halt, he commanded. System halt! System halt! The command took. Processes collapsed. Windows closed. The Serenity package code, which was bolstering his serotonin levels, regulating his pulse and breathing, and suppressing the fear signals propagating through his amygdala, ceased. The viral pattern didn't stop. Nexus nodes in his brain continued to reach out to Shu's. Sweat beaded on his brow. His heart jumped into his throat. Cade was well and truly fucked. Only a single option remained. Volcano, Mastodon, Cedar. Cade heard the words, visualized them superimposed. The mantra unfolded within him, a fractal persona expanding into the spaces of his mind, sweeping away bits of memory, identity, and conception, replacing them with The world went blurry for just a moment, then snapped back into a new focus. Cade blinked. He was dizzy, suddenly disoriented. He blinked again, lifted his glass of water to his mouth. His hand was trembling. Damn, he was nervous. What had they just been talking about? I'm sorry, Professor Shu, what were you saying? He looked up at her. 19. The Confusion. Watts patiently watched from afar. Dinner was all smiles and oohs and ahs. Then something happened. The smile left Shu's face. She shook her head slightly, and something happened to Cade. A worried look crossed his face. He closed his eyes. His head nodded, like he'd nearly fainted. When he opened his eyes again, something was different. He took a sip of water, and his hand shook visibly in the scope. His body language changed. He slumped, seemed to withdraw into himself. Shu seemed hyper-alert now. On a hunch, Watts moved the scope down to ground level. There, the driver of the car that had dropped Cade off, walking briskly towards the restaurant. Watts judged the distance. No way could he get there first. He reached into his pack, pulled out the highly illegal rifle, screwed on the barrel, slid the scope he'd been using into the groove on top until it snapped into place. He looked at the assembled sniper rifle for a moment. Was he willing to do this? Was he willing to kill? He just didn't know. "What were you saying?" Cade asked. He blinked again to try to shake this fog from his head. Su-Yong Shu was looking at him, her head cocked to one side, lips slightly parted, eyes narrowed, studying him like a particularly puzzling scientific specimen.
"I was saying..."
She spoke slowly, as if picking her words carefully.
"That it's important to understand ourselves and what makes us tick."
Yes, of course. Whatever had just happened, it was passing. His head was clearing. He must still be jet-lagged.
"Cade?"
Cade blinked in surprise. Shu's mind had just touched his. She just sent him verbal thoughts. Was she using Nexus?
"Cade, keep talking. Show no sign that we are communicating this way."
Show no sign? Why?
"I agree completely," he said aloud. "It's important to understand ourselves."
How was she doing this? And what was going on in his head? Why wasn't Nexus OS running? How was she talking to him?
"Cade, you can talk to me this way as well. Like so."
He saw it. He felt it. "Hello?" he sent to her.
"Good," she continued. "You've had some sort of minor seizure, Cade. I'm trying to understand it. Relax for me and keep talking as if nothing has happened."
A chill went up Cade's spine. A seizure? Was it a side effect of the Nexus? Had all their playing with fire finally burnt him? "Okay," he sent back. He felt tendrils of her mind touch him lightly, insinuate themselves into him. He babbled something to her about his research. As he did, Cade could feel her in his mind, going deeper, going broader, tendrils of thought branching and spreading throughout him. She felt unlike any other human being he'd ever touched through Nexus. Her mind was everywhere inside his.
"Keep talking,"
she sent him. He rambled, distantly aware that she was nodding, replying.
"Stay calm,"
he told himself. Shu's mind permeated his. She touched memory after memory. It frightened him. He should be resisting. There was something he couldn't let her see. He was sweating. Her scrutiny was terrible. Her mind was vast, her tendrils everywhere.
"Take a deep breath, Cade. Keep calm."
"Calm. Yes." He took a breath. He had some way of calming himself. Some software he'd written.
"Cade, I think someone has been manipulating your memories. They're somehow hiding things from you."
His memories? Oh, fucking fuck! What the hell was going on?
"Relax,"
Shu sent to him.
"Open to me fully. I think I can undo what's been done."
She exuded peace, compassion, tenderness.
"It may be a bit disorienting,"
she went on,
"like waking from a dream."
Cade was confused. His memories were hazy. Things didn't make sense. What could have happened? Shu chattered at him, covering the moment, something about animal studies he could barely follow.
"I'm restoring your memories now,"
she replied. He felt her expand even further within him then. She suffused his mind, touched every part of him at once. It was beyond anything he could imagine doing. He could see links between his memories as she explored them. She was sifting through his thoughts and memories faster than Cade could follow. It was as intense an experience as a Nexus calibration. How was she processing so much information? How could her mind be so vast? Wait. He remembered now. The memory started to flood back in as Shu unlocked them. The briefing with the ERD, the mission, the defenses Rangan had built, the training, false memories, the panic code, on his phone, a code to call in help in case he was in danger. He reached for his phone. Nothing happened. His hand refused to obey. He tried the other. No good. He tried to yell for help. Nothing. Shu had paralyzed him. He was under her control.
Cade, stay calm. We need to understand what's happened to you.
Oh, no. He remembered why he was here now. If she saw what was in his mind, she'd know he was a spy. He had to get out of here. He had one last weapon left, the weapon Rangan had given him. He needed Nexus up and running. Restart. Boot sequences scrolled across his mind's eye. As he drew his attention inside, Cade became more aware of Shu's presence. Shu had synchronized millions of Nexus nodes in his brain to hers. She'd configured them in thousands of complex circuits, each a sensor, each a manipulator. He could feel her fascination as she observed his transformation. Thousands of the circuits were trained on the Nexus OS, studying it, analyzing its parts. The circuits were in his brain, his mind. He would take it back from her. He remembered nights playing push-pull with Rangan, with Ilya, with Watts. They'd use the Nexus synchronicity between their minds to try to maneuver each other's bodies with their thoughts alone. Reaching out with Nexus to try to move Ilya's hand, blink Rangan's eyelid, make a word come out of Watts's mouth. If you could send enough of the right signals into someone else's brain via Nexus, if your signals could be stronger and more coherent than their own, then you could overcome the signals coming from within their own brain. You could control them. That's what Shu was doing to him now. But no one was better at that than Cade. He pushed at the circuits she'd built in his mind, aiming to disrupt them, to free his neurons from her invading signals. The circuits flexed, bent, but didn't break. He drew in a breath, pushed harder, gave it everything he had. Circuits snapped, frayed, decored. Coherence from within his brain squeezed out her foreign signals. For a moment, he was almost free of her. Outside, Shu closed her body's eyes for a moment, continuing with some story.
It was a priceless moment, let me tell you. I find animal subjects just fascinating. I'm not your enemy.
She sent him.
Stop fighting me.
He paused to get his mental breath, and in that break, Shu's mind infiltrated his own again. Her circuits began to reassemble inside him. She was putting out an incredible volume of radio traffic, swamping the Nexus nodes in his brain with it. Sensors reformed, manipulators reformed. Cade gritted his teeth. If he gave in, she would discover that the ERD had sent him, and when she did... He clenched his mind with all the effort he could muster, disrupted her circuits once more, pushed her fractionally out of his head. He grunted from the effort. Pain blossomed in the front of his skull. His vision wobbled.
Cade, she sent. Stop! We have much to talk about!
He couldn't maintain the effort of forcing her out. His mental push faltered. Her thoughts bored back into him, spreading, expanding, going deeper. She was analyzing him, analyzing his thoughts, trying to get into his memories, trying to pry apart his mind, trying to absorb the complexity of the still-booting Nexus OS. How is that possible? Her mind was so vast. She was what Holtzman had said, a superhuman intelligence, a post-human. His life would mean nothing to her. There, the OS was up. A sense of calm descended on him as the Serenity package restored his equilibrium. The weapons Rangan had built were his to use once more. He had a momentary flicker of doubt. Should he be doing this? He saw no other way. Attack her to break her hold on him,
Pound the emergency code on the phone. Flee. Activate ND asterisk. The Nexus disruptor signal blared out of his skull. Filters dampened it within him. Shu's mind recoiled, spasming. She flinched as if she'd been slapped. Cade winced at the pain inside his own skull. Even through the filters, it was intense. He tried to move his hand. Still no good. He cranked up the disruptor and its matching filters, let them consume all the Nexus nodes they wanted. Static invaded his mind. Not so bad. He could handle it. Not so bad. He ground his teeth together at the pain. A hand descended on his shoulder. It didn't matter. He could do this. He must do this. Enough! Shu said the word aloud and inside him at the same time. He felt her mind shift. The signals she sent out cohered, a solid, continuous pulse of data from billions of nodes at once, pulsing out at whole watts. It overwhelmed him. His control over the nodes in his brain faltered. They became Shu's. They pulsed, pulsed, pulsed. All went white. Every sense overloaded. Not in static, but in a single, coherent wave. Everything was one single pulsing rhythm. Thought evaporated. Time evaporated. Space evaporated. Identity evaporated. There was nothing. Nothing but this white. Beyond white. Watts tensed. The driver with the all-too-familiar face came up the stairs to the roof. Cade's back was to him. The driver crossed the distance between them at a walk, careful to not alarm the serving staff. Watts flicked the safety off of his rifle. The driver's back was square in the center of his sights. If he did shoot, would one shot take him down? It had taken many, many bullets to take down the last man he'd seen with that face. He had to decide. Fire now, on a bad hunch. Kill on incomplete data. Or watch the situation. Watts took a deep breath. They were in public. Cade had been seen with Shu. If they were going to kill him, they wouldn't do it in plain sight. He watched the driver's hand come down on Cade's shoulder. Watts tensed. Then, nothing. He exhaled, but kept the crosshairs on the back of the driver's head. 20. Only human. Consciousness returned slowly, in fragments. He was alive. His name was Cade. Caden Lane. Vision faded back in, slowly, disorientingly. Shu was looking at him. How long had he been gone? How long had he been back? He tried to speak, found that he could not. His heart pounded in his chest. He tried to throw his mind at hers, found that it was just as restrained. He willed his hand to move towards the phone in his pocket, and it would not obey him. The Nexus disruptor was no longer running. He tried to start it again. The Nexus OS ignored him. A chill went up his spine. Just like that, he'd lost. Su-Yong Shu controlled him. This is what we did to Sam, he realized. He could feel Shu rifling through his mind, his memories, the creation of Nexus OS, the party, the bust, the briefing about her, the mission they'd sent him on.
You're a fool, Caden Lane.
I didn't want to be here, he sent. I was blackmailed. He felt no pity from her, no sympathy.
You could have come to me, she sent. You could have told me. I would have protected you. You and I, we're alike. We're on the same side.
Are we? He wondered.
They accused you of things, Cade sent back to her. They showed me evidence. You use Nexus to kill people and to coerce them. You took over their minds like you're taking over mine.
She struck him then, with her mind. It hurt like hell. He could feel the stinging across his face, as if she'd reached out with her right hand and slapped him. Harder, like she'd broken bones in his face. Left him bleeding and bruised. He couldn't even flinch. He blinked, breathed in through his nose. His face ached. Tears welled up in his eyes.
You arrogant child, Shu sent him. How dare you lecture me on morality? Do you know the things those monsters you serve have done? Here, see them.
He saw images from Shu's mind. A Chinese scientist found dead in a Saigon brothel. A Range Rover found at the foot of a cliff in the Australian outback, bodies charred beyond recognition.
a famous Indian AI researcher, no identifiable pieces of her remaining after a car bomb in Delhi, an American geneticist found in an apparent suicide in his home, more. The worst, Yang Wei, her mentor, the Nobel Prize-winning neuroscientist who trained her, one of the greatest minds she'd ever known, burning to death, trapped in his limousine after the Americans had attacked it, dying in agony as Xu watched helplessly. Her mind was full of rage, full of hate. She despised them.
"They kill to stop progress," she said, "to stop science that frightens them, to stop our evolution. How could you work with them?"
Cade trembled. "They called you a killer. They said you helped your government assassinate people. You built the tools." Su Yong Shu sighed mentally. She emanated regret.
"They use the tools I built, yes. My government is little better than yours. They take science and they pervert it."
So it was true then. They'd used her tools to kill.
"They'll do the same to you," Shu sent to him. "They'll use your tools in ways you never intended."
"I won't let them," he replied. Shu mentally scoffed at him.
"They won't ask your permission."
"I'll stop them," he told her. "I will." Another image bubbled up in Cade's thoughts. Su Yong Shu in front of rows of identical Confucian fist soldiers, arms spread widely as if to say, "Ta-da!"
"They said you helped China make soldiers, clone soldiers, human robots."
Her mind hardened in anger.
"There's one right behind you. Why don't you ask him what he thinks?"
She sounded cold, dangerous. The hand on his shoulder. Fang's voice echoed laughter in Cade's mind.
"Robots. I like it. Robots strong, made of titanium and carbon fiber. Bulletproof."
"Fang," Shu said aloud, "why don't you sit and help us with this food? We seem to have more than we need."
Fang sat next to Cade, heaped a plate up with food, radiating appetite and amusement.
"You're a clone," Cade sent him. "A slave. They showed me."
Fang laughed in Cade's mind again, his mouth full of noodles.
"Clone, yeah. Like I told you, big family. Lots of brothers. Slave, that's what they wanted. But I'm free. My brothers, too. Thanks to her." Good noodles,"
Shu cut in.
"I could not tolerate the thought of post-humans as slaves to mere humans."
"Dr. Shu, I give up," Cade sent.
"I'm sorry any of this happened. How can I persuade you to let me go?"
Shu sipped her tea, her face turned towards the lightning coming down east of Bangkok.
"I think the storm's coming closer," she said. "Don't you?"
Cade felt some control of his body return. He turned to look. Maybe the lightning was a little closer. It was hard to say.
"You're a very dangerous man, Caden Lane. Your government is right to fear you. This technology we have is explosive in its potential. How could baseline humans compete with us?"
"I don't mean to harm anyone," he told her. "I never did."
"You're only barely in control of your own mind," she scoffed. "Your intentions mean next to nothing right now."
Cade said nothing. They sat in silence for a moment.
"Come to my lab,"
she sent him.
"Accept the postdoc. Let the ERD think you're spying for them."
That hatred for the ERD. He could feel it at every thought of them. Shu continued.
"We can feed them enough to keep them at bay. And in the meantime, we'll do some remarkable things of our own."
It washed over him. Images and plans from her mind. Mere glimpses. Paths towards boosted intelligence, uploading minds from brains and into computers, savant-like cognitive powers, supermemory, pattern recognition that would put any data miner to shame, knowledge banks shared mind to mind, true merger into group beings, transformations of politics, economics, art, intelligence and creativity that could pry apart the deepest mysteries of physics, of math, of every science known to man. She would change the world. She would lift the human mind to new heights. He could be part of it. A post-human, upgraded through her knowledge, empowered to help build this new world. It was intoxicating. It was everything he wanted. How could he possibly say no?
Never swallow what they're selling whole.
Ilya had said that. He had to fight to hang on to his skepticism, to push back against this seduction. Would your government pervert my science as well? He asked her. Would they turn my discoveries into weapons? Shu looked out at the horizon. He could feel the edges of her thoughts. She was thinking of something that had happened a long, long time ago.
We hide the most important work, she said, but we have to give them some progress, for now.
And when does it stop? He asked.
Soon,
she sent him. She sounded cold and distant in his mind.
There is a war coming. A world war. Not between China and America. Between humans and post-humans. You see it all around you. The humans are doing everything they can to prevent the post-human transition from occurring, while we are struggling to be free of their controls.
War? He turned the word over in his mind.
A world war. People will die. Look at the big picture, Cade. Imagine a world full of beings as far beyond humans as humans are beyond chimps. That is the future we could inhabit. That is the future we could help bring about. Doesn't that sound like a worthy goal?
It did. She knew it did.
Isn't that something worth making some sacrifices for?
She asked him. He struggled for the right words, the right way to explain it. Other people's lives aren't yours to sacrifice, he sent. Shu shrugged mentally.
The world has more than 8 billion people on it, she sent. Surely we can afford to lose a few.
That's what it came down to, then. Would he be willing to let a few die to make the world a better place? A few dozen? A few thousand? A few million? Where would he draw the line? Who would he kill for the freedom to improve his own mind? Who would he kill to rise to new heights? Who would he kill so that post-humans might be born? Shu caught the thrust of his thoughts.
This is directed evolution, she sent. How many generations would this take natural selection? Millions. The faster we uplift ourselves, the fewer who need to die. Join me. Help move the work forward.
War. War over the human condition. War for the right to change oneself. War to create humanity's successor species. War to usher in a utopia. Had it begun already? Was the ERD an army, fighting to keep post-humans from coming into existence? And evolution. Evolution was a bloody process indeed. War would mean epic numbers of dead. It was too much for him. He was in over his head. He needed to step back, collect himself.
I need to think about this, Dr. Shu.
He did his best to stay calm. This was too much, too much.
It's a lot all at once, he said.
She looked him in the eye. He could feel her evaluating him, feeling out his mind.
Of course,
she replied. Shu nodded, picking up the thread of their out loud conversation.
Fang, what do you think of the weather?
Fang lifted his eyes from his food to the horizon.
Definitely coming this way,
Fang said.
Rain here again in half an hour.
A thought struck Cade. Why don't you leave China? Why not come to the U.S.? Shu snorted mentally.
I'd be even less free in your country. My government doesn't object to post-humans so long as the first post-humans are Chinese. They want control, fools, as if such beings will be bound by nationality.
So why not go somewhere else? Here in Thailand, maybe.
We're not all so free.
He got a sense, then, of an obligation, a mother's love, an image of a young girl, long black hair, dark eyes, her daughter.
Her name is Ling, she sent him. It means compassion.
She's your daughter?
Yes. She's the leverage they have over you?
He asked.
She's part of it,
Shu replied. Cade caught a glimpse of something else then, an image of Shu, a younger Shu, a pregnant Shu, her belly huge, in a surgical theater, her skull shaven, frightened, alone, in pain, about to go through something no one else had yet survived. And then something so huge it sent him reeling. A network of processors, vast computing power, vast storage, an incredible mind, epic in scope, something that subsumed Su Yong Shu, stretched beyond her.
Oh my God,
he said it out loud before he could control himself.
Yes, it's beautiful.
She was staring out at the sky, covering his gaff.
Is that you?
He asked her.
You're an upload? You were sick, is that it? You were forced to try, and you succeeded. You're the first digital being.
His mind was spinning. He was trying to make sense of the glimpse he'd seen. She didn't answer for a moment. Cade felt the dread and awe climb up his spine, set the hairs on the back of his neck on end, chilling him even in the warm Bangkok night.
Please, she replied. I shouldn't have let you see that. The less you know, the safer for both of us.
They sat in silence for a while, watching the lightning illuminate the eastern sky.
I think you should come visit my lab in Shanghai,
Shu said aloud.
And perhaps your collaborator Rangan Shankari as well. You'll get to see the lab, meet the other postdocs and graduate students, some of the other faculty. We can get a better sense if there would be a good fit.
Say yes,
she urged him.
Your masters will believe you've done your part. We'll have time to discuss more later.
Thank you, Cade sent to her. I think that's a wonderful idea. Thank you for the invitation. The check came. Fang went to fetch the car, left them watching the storm approaching on the horizon. Lightning struck again, closer. Thunder boomed seconds later. Raindrops touched the far side of the river.
Come, Cade,
Shu said a few minutes later.
Fang will have the car by now. We can drop you off at your next engagement.
He felt her release him fully then. His body and his mind were his once more. It felt good. The opal pulled around, glistening in the rain that was now beginning to fall. Fang held open the door for Shu, and then for Cade, and then they were on their way. They drove in silence for a few moments before Shu reached out to him again.
You will need to choose soon, Cade. Organizations like the ERD exist to stop humans from taking the next step. Conflict is inevitable.
She paused.
You have to decide if you're on the side of progress or on the side of stagnation.
Cade considered that. I'm on the side of peace, he sent, and freedom. Shu mentally chuckled.
You are so naive.
Cade didn't reply. Wet, neon-streaked streets slid by outside the car's windows.
Cade.
Shu sounded more serious now.
The ERD will probe your memories of our dinner. We must prepare you for that with an alternate script. Open yourself to me.
Do I have a choice? He asked her.
I won't force you, but if our conversation is unearthed by the ERD, it will not go well for you or those you care about.
False memories. Again. Yet she was right. Will I forget what just happened? He asked her.
Oh, no. I am not so crude. You will remember. But I will give you a second set of memories you can share with others. You will only forget the truth if you are under duress.
Cade sighed. There was no way around this.
Okay,
he sent her. Let's get on with it. He opened his mind to her. Her thoughts flowed into him, suffused him, pressed all else aside. Consciousness receded. When he came to, he felt the same. Then she showed him, and he understood. He remembered the truth, and he remembered an alternate event, just a slight twist on what had actually happened. It awed him. In minutes, she'd made a change to his mind of a subtlety and sophistication he wouldn't have believed possible. His mind could be completely hers, Cade realized. Shu could do anything with him that she wanted. The scope of her ability to manipulate his mind was staggering. She was post-human already.
Watts watched through the scope of the rifle as the man with the all-too-familiar face left Shu and Cade and headed back to the car. Watts used the scope to capture images of that face and video of his gait. Who was this man who was driving Shu? Could he be wrong on the face?
He didn't think so.
The last man to wear that face had made a powerful impression.
He'd killed 4 heavily augmented Special Forces Marines with his bare hands before they'd taken him down. That wasn't something Watts was likely to forget. Could this be the reason the ERD had sent Cade here? Did it have to do with this man, with Shu? If so, why Cade? And did this have anything to do with the monk who'd followed Cade and Cadaranes to their hotel the night before? The unknowns were piling up. The car was coming around to the front of the restaurant now. Watts packed up his gear and prepared to follow. 21. Wild at Heart. Shu studied Cade as the glossy black Opel pulled up in front of the Wild at Heart bar where the neuroscience student's mixer was to be held.
"Here you go,"
Fang said as he opened the door for the boy to exit.
"Door-to-door service."
"That was very stimulating, Cade," Shu told him. "Let's talk soon."
"It was, Dr. Shu. Thank you for dinner. I'll be in touch on the dates for the Shanghai visit." He shook her hand and turned. "And it was good to meet you, Fang. I'm glad we talked." Cade nodded, held up his hand in salutation, and was gone. Fang got back into the driver's seat.
"Thoughts?"
Shu asked him. Fang put the car in gear, looked both ways, cautiously eased back into the riotous traffic of Bangkok. Shu knew he was taking the time to collect himself, to be sure he knew his own mind before he answered her. Always so careful after all this time.
"I made them that way,"
she reminded herself.
"The boy is dangerous,"
Fang sent to her.
"He poses a great risk."
"He could be a great asset,"
Shu replied.
"He's done impressive work to have come so far so fast."
"Not as impressive as your accomplishments,"
Fang told her.
"Fang, the humans outnumber us by orders of magnitude," she sent back. "No matter how capable I am, I can't do it alone. I can't do it with just the team in Shanghai. If we're going to prevail, we need more on our side. More who can move the frontiers forward. Those individuals are rare. Cade is one of them."
"Is that the only reason?"
Fang asked. He knew her too well. The old anger rose up. The painful memories. Yang Wei, her mentor, burning to death in that limo, a victim of the CIA, along with... Nausea struck her. Her hand went unbidden to her belly. She forced herself to pull it away. This body was a traitor. Anger was better than sorrow.
"I hate them, Fang. The CIA, the ERD, they are the same. I despise them for the beautiful minds they've destroyed. I hate them for the pain they've inflicted. And yes, I resent the ERD for using him as a weapon against me. How dare they? The ignorant, venomous fools! I'm not a machine, Fang. I feel emotions as strongly as ever. And what I feel towards the Americans is rage."
Fang was silent for a moment, then spoke into her mind.
"You could compel him."
Shu chuckled. Was Fang testing her?
"You know my view on that," she replied. "If I took control of him, what would that say to anyone else? Would I need to control them all? How much would they accomplish as my puppets? I would become no better than our masters and no more effective. No, we're most capable as autonomous beings who choose to come together. Our associations must be voluntary."
She felt Fang's satisfaction with her answer. If it was a test, she'd passed. The line between loyalty and compulsion remained clear.
"I remain concerned,"
Fang sent.
"The Americans respect you. They will not settle for surface answers. They may burrow deep, even destructively so. The memories and block you implanted may not hold."
"They won't harm him,"
Shu insisted.
"They want to use him to spy on me. And short of quite destructive methods, what I've done will hold."
"Perhaps,"
Fang replied.
"The Americans can't hurt me at any rate."
"Perhaps."
Fang refused to accept just how unassailable she'd become.
"They can inconvenience you,"
he sent.
"Greatly."
"Yes,"
she replied.
"That they can."
"They can perhaps goad our masters into hurting you,"
Fang went on.
"Or worse."
It was a possibility, one that bore more safeguards against it.
"So, what do you recommend?"
she asked. Fang was silent for a moment, threading the opal through wet Bangkok traffic.
I think the Americans should not get the chance to deeply interrogate Caden Lane.
You mean that we should liberate him?
She asked.
Or that we should kill him?
Fang was silent again.
I mean that the Americans should not get the chance to interrogate Caden Lane.
I doubt our masters would agree to either silencing him or whisking him away to China on such short notice, she said.
Fang took his time replying.
What they do not know of, they need not agree to,
he said.
Accidents happen. Bangkok is a dangerous place.
You've become so hard, Fang, she sent him. You would kill this boy, an innocent?
Your safety is my priority. He threatens it.
What about the woman, the agent he's with?
Fang considered.
Challenging, not impossible.
I would rather have him alive and on our side than dead.
You may not have that choice,
Fang replied.
We must all act within the choices we are given.
Su Yongshu leaned back into the plush seat of the opal and contemplated. The Wild at Heart Bar was a sprawling three-story club in the heart of Bangkok's tourist district. It was 9 p.m., halfway into the 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. mixer, and the place was packed with students attending the conference. Cade meandered through the throng, lost in thought. What had he expected of Shu? That she'd be completely innocent of what the ERD had accused her of? That she'd be a monster? She was neither. The opportunity she was offering him was beyond his wildest dreams. Could he accept it? Could he fool the ERD? Could he live with himself if his work was weaponized, was used to harm innocents? Could he become post-human, a demigod, an immortal? He got in line for a drink, peeled off 200 baht bills for something strong and alcoholic. The Nexus link on his phone came alive before the drink reached his lips.
Welcome back. Meet me on the roof.
Cade shrugged and made his way to the roof, downing his drink as he went. Showtime. Again. He found Sam with her back to the party, looking out onto the street and the chaotic, rain-soaked capital of Thailand. Hey.
Hi there.
She smiled at him, put her hand on his arm.
Put your arm around me.
What?
Just do it.
She turned back to the street, leaning against the banister. Cade grimaced, put his arm around her, joined her in leaning out for a view. Sam pressed her body closer. The rain made the night almost cool. Her body was distinctly warm and firm and curved under his hand.
Give me your other hand. I need a few drops of your blood.
What?
I need to see if she's dosed you with anything. I would have told you. Maybe, if you knew, if you could. Hold out your hand.
Cade did as he was told. Sam took his free hand in hers. With her other hand, she produced a small black rectangular device. She pressed it against the tip of his finger. He felt a brief sting, then a tiny bit of suction. Sam held it there for a few seconds, removed it, put it back in her pocket. She snuggled against him, gave him a smile.
So, you had a good dinner? How'd it go?
Good. She invited me to come visit the lab, see if I was a good fit for the postdoc position.
Excellent. Now walk me through the dinner. Let me see it and hear it from your perspective.
Showtime indeed. Cade let himself sink into the alternate memories Shu had scripted in his mind. They fit like a mask, like a garment over his mind, like a role he was playing on a stage. He opened himself to Sam. She roamed through his memories of the night. He watched her. She skimmed the early part of the conversation, focused on the work portion, absorbed the deliciousness of the meal, the sensuality Shu exuded as she savored the food. Cade found himself becoming aroused. Sam's body felt good against his. She was snuggled up against him, his hand on the swell of her hip. She felt firm, athletic, and still she had these curves. He could smell her hair. He liked her warmth, her touch. Sam noticed his response. She moved fractionally further away, opening a tiny space between their bodies. His hand was still on her hip, but the message was clear.
This is just an act, buddy.
Cade sighed. It wasn't like he wanted to be turned on by Samantha Cataranes. Sam went back to sifting through his memories. She scanned the dinner and conversation from beginning to end. If she detected any flaw, if she was suspicious in any way, she didn't show it. Sam and Cade's phones buzzed simultaneously. It was a message from Narong.
Meet me out front of Mixer at 10:15 to head to the after party.
What's this after party about?
It's a chance to get closer to Narong, which means closer to Suk Pratnung and his Uncle Ted. We're going.
You're the boss. They went back into the mixer, mingled for another hour. 10 p.m. came. The mixer was officially over. Some students elected to stay and continue their drinking at the Wild at Heart bar. Others filed out into the rainy night. Sam dragged Cade out to the front entrance. Narong met them there.
So, where's this after party? Sam asked.
It's in Sukhumvit,
Narong answered.
You know the city?
A little,
Sam replied.
It's off Soi Samahan, just east of the Nanan district.
He looked out at the rain.
We can take a cab most of the way, then walk a few blocks.
Sam's interest was piqued. Soi Samahan, eh?
Is that near Sukchai Market?
She asked. Narong looked surprised.
It's a few blocks from there. We don't have to go near it, really. There's a different way.
I'd love to see it, actually. I've heard a lot of stories about it.
Narong looked uncomfortable again.
Well, it's not the classiest area.
Sam laughed.
I'm a big girl. I'm a scientist. I'm really curious.
Narong searched her eyes, as if trying to determine how much she could handle, or how much he could trust her. He made a decision.
Okay, just stick with me and do what I say when we're there. Cade, that sound okay by you?
Cade exuded mild befuddlement.
Sure, I'm down for whatever.
Narong shrugged again, picked out his umbrella from the basket by the door, and stepped out. He whistled to hail a tuk-tuk. The three of them climbed into its back. Sam squeezed between Cade and Narong. She could feel Cade studiously trying to ignore the way her body was pressed against his. And Narong? She didn't need a Nexus connection to read what was on his mind. The tuk-tuk zipped through wet traffic. The streets were glossy black with streaks of supersaturated neon. Reds, blues, greens, yellows. A rainbow of reflected light. Rain got in through the open sides, spraying them gently. Sam stayed driest in the middle. With the rain and the wind from the open sides of the tuk-tuk, Bangkok was pleasantly cool for once. The tuk-tuk dodged cheap Tata two-seater cars from India, knock-off Vespas from Vietnam, the occasional Hyundai four-seater taxi, pedestrians making their way across wet streets in the rain. They passed down urban valleys of towering glass and steel office blocks, their neon-lit ground floors stuffed with noodle shops, massage parlors, boutiques, discount electronic stores, pharmacies, bars. Golden shrines and temples dotted the urban landscapes, some tiny, some sprawling, spires and Buddhas and fearsome temple guardian statues. At 10:30 p.m., everything was open, restaurants, shops, bars, temples. People filed in through temple gates, incense sticks in hand, while across the street, rock music blared out of red-lit bars. They turned on to Sukhumvit 4, the infamous Soi Nanatai, one of Bangkok's more popular sex districts. Open-air bars with neon signs lined the narrow street. Foot traffic slowed their tuk-tuk to a crawl. Women in tiny miniskirts and short shorts and improbably large breasts for their tiny frames were everywhere. The men were Indian, Chinese, or white. The women were uniformly Thai, young, and for hire. They sat on men's laps, draped themselves over them at the bars, danced lasciviously with each other, and waited for the customers to take them home, for a price. Sam felt Cade tense next to her. His eyes were wide. So much sex on sale. Narong was looking down at his hands. A raven-haired girl in tiny hot pants and a matching white bikini top blew a kiss at their tuk-tuk. Sam doubted she was 18. Such a strange country, Sam thought to herself. A 250,000 monks who don't drink or smoke or swear. A 250,000 prostitutes filling in all the spaces where the monks aren't. Then again, she spotted a shaven-headed man, Thai, wearing normal clothes with a black miniskirted girl on his lap. Maybe the monks are here, too. The tuk-tuk slowly wound its way down the street. A neon sign advertised live orgy shows. The crude animation depicted a woman's body between that of two men, both of them thrusting into her in unison. Cade's head tracked it as they passed. "Is this that market you were talking about? Suk Chai?" he asked. Sam could feel his conflicting revulsion, arousal, and fascination.
"No,"
Sam answered.
"This is just sex,"
Narong elaborated.
"Suk Chai market is more, exotic."
He didn't sound comfortable. They turned onto a side street, Soi Samahan. They threaded through traffic, turned onto another, smaller side street. There was no street sign. They were close. The tuk-tuk pulled up to a tiny alley between buildings.
"We're here,"
Narong said. He paid the driver.
"You're still sure you want to see Suk Chai?"
Sam nodded. Cade shrugged.
"Stay with me while we're in the market,"
Narong said, unfurling the umbrella above them.
"Not everything here is strictly legal. You'll look less suspicious with me as your guide."
He led them into the maze of alleyways. Watts paused on the street, near where the tuk-tuk had left Cade and his companions. The alley they'd gone down. There was little reason to head down that alley except to reach Suk Chai. What were they doing there? He knew Suk Chai well. It would be difficult to follow them without being conspicuous. He looked up into the rain. The buildings were tightly spaced here. Yes, that would do. He slipped into the shadows, tightened the straps of the pack across his back, put his hands to the brick, and began to climb. Briefing. The Chandler Act, a.k.a. the Emerging Technological Threats Act of 2032, is the opening salvo in a new war on science. To understand the future course of this war, one need only look at the history of the war on drugs and the war on terror. Like those two manufactured wars, this one will be never-ending, freedom-destroying, counterproductive, and ultimately understood to have caused far more damage than the supposed threat it was aimed at ever could have. Free the Future, 2032. 22. The Bazaar of the Bizarre. Sam kept her eye on Narong as he led them on a winding, zigzag path through the narrow alleys. A pair of burly toughs lounged at one intersection, leaning against brick walls, heedless of the rain, improbably huge muscles bulging in their arms and chests. Narong nodded fractionally, kept walking. One more turn beyond the tufts, and a much wider alleyway opened. Stalls and shops lined both sides. Neon and LED lit the air. Scores of people moved down the lane. Hundreds of people. They paused at the stalls, talked quietly, inspected wares and price sheets, haggled in low voices. Everything had a furtive air. Collars were turned up, hoods pulled over heads and down over faces. Two more inhumanly muscular men loitered at the intersection, glowering. Muscle grafts, Sam thought. Inefficient, draining, but intimidating. They'll probably die of enlarged hearts trying to support all that mass. Narong led them down the street. Sam let Cade and the Thai student share the umbrella. She walked a few steps behind them. The rain felt good on her face. Her tactical contacts snapped every face, recorded every gait, uploaded them for analysis and identification. Cade's eyes were everywhere. The wide alley was bustling with people, with walks going over open fires, with sights and smells, and with vendors offering their wares. The first few stalls were reproductive services, sex selection, ovafusion to make a child from two mothers, no father necessary, trifusion to create a child with genes from two fathers and a surrogate mother, gene tweaks for your kids. Height, eye color, hair color, muscle mass, weight, health, IQ, charisma. Other services by request. Reprogenetics gave way to biocosmetics. Semi-nude men and women modeled the wares. A petite copper-skinned beauty in a skimpy bikini posed in front of a shop advertising skin color transformation viruses. Less dramatic melanin therapy was on sale to make Asian skin lighter, Caucasian skin more tan, or whatever the customer might desire. The semi-nude woman at the next stall showed living tattoos. A bioluminescent dragon crawled up from below her navel, climbed its way up her chest, a claw gripping her left breast. The tattoo snaked around her neck and returned on her right side. Its eyes glowed amber. She tensed her muscles and it moved, tail swishing, scales changing colors, glowing flames erupting from its mouth and nostrils. Fat cutters, fat boosters, Nordic cheekbones, square jaws, almond eye shapes, golden eyes, cat slit eyes, hair curling viruses, hair straightening viruses, forked tongues, prehensile tongues, height therapy. The signs and models promised it all, no surgery required. However you wish to alter your appearance, from mild to wild, the gene hackers of Sukchai Market could reprogram your cells to make it happen, provided you had the cash.
Are these things all for real?
Kate asked, voice hushed. Narong shrugged.
Probably some scams here, but mostly, yeah. Is it safe? Different question.
What do you mean? Kate asked.
Gene hacking. Sometimes they miss the gene they want, you know. Break something else. Cancer, maybe. Or worse. You hear stories.
But don't they test this stuff? Safety trials, that sort of thing?
There's no FDA on this street, man. You want to try something, you ask around about the shop, make sure there's no horror stories. Make sure they have a good reputation, a clean reputation.
Biocosmetics gave way to bioerotics. Booths offered viral gene injections to deliver enlarged or firmed natural breasts, larger penises, enhanced orgasms, porn star feats of stamina and recovery. A banner advertised female arousal superchargers with a choice of delivery vehicle. Transform virus for permanent changes. Tasteless, odorless liquid for short-term effect. The booth was thronged, the customers entirely male. Large bundles of cash changed hands for syringes and small vials. Cade was simultaneously agape and aroused.
Tasteless and odorless?
Cade wondered.
So you can spike someone's drink with it,
Sam answered for him. His revulsion overwhelmed what arousal there had been. Bioneurals followed bioerotics, stay-awakes, sleep reduction hacks, extroverters, dream recall enhancers, dream suppressors, love injections, heartbreak erasers, viral pair-bonding therapy, monogamy shots. Sexual orientation shifters in temporary and permanent varieties. Savant drugs claim to put the customer in a hyperproductive or hypercreative trance. A super bright LED sign offered viral injections to boost musical ability, another to remove guilt, a third to intensify religious faith and spiritual experiences. There were customers perusing and discussing at all of the booths. Sam hardened herself. These were the worst. These were the ones that could be used as weapons, to control and degrade and enslave. She captured every face she saw, searched for any sign of communion virus, of dwitty. None in sight. But who knew what could be provided if you asked the right person? She thought of Chris Evans, physically and mentally crippled, in busting a dwitty ring. It made her angry. Cade sensed her mood. He sent her a sense of curiosity, an unspoken question. Sam ignored it. Extreme medicine came next. A tall glass cylinder housed human organs in clear, bubbling fluid. Hearts, livers, kidneys, available for transplantation. Cloned organs from your own cells, speed-grown in just a few days. Another stall offered viral therapy it claimed would trigger regeneration of severed digits or limbs.
Why is this stuff down here? Cade asked. Shouldn't this be in a mainstream hospital?
Probably non-human genes,
Narong said.
The super-fast-growing organs are hacked way outside human parameters. And the regeneration hacks use genes from some lizard, newts or geckos or something like that. Not legal to insert into a human.
Sam wondered if any of this would be of use to Chris Evans. Could it get him back on his feet faster? End his isolation more quickly? She glanced back at the bioneurals. Such vile stuff. Chris risked his life fighting shit like that. Was it possible to separate the mind control from the cloned organs and regeneration, to embrace one and not the other? She pushed the thought out of her mind. She had a job to do. She had laws she was sworn to uphold. The modifications on offer became progressively more extreme as they neared the end of the market. Muscle grafts like those the local thugs sported. Genetic gender reassignment, supercharged hemoglobin with 10 times the oxygen capacity. More.
You have to be careful of a lot of this stuff,
Narong commented.
Change one thing in the body, it has ripple effects on a dozen other things, let alone the brain. What kind of side effects are you going to see 10 or 20 years from now? Who the hell knows?
You seem to have thought a lot about this, Narong, Sam observed. Narong was silent for a while.
It's hard not to. We'd be better off if this was all legal. It's all wink-wink, nudge-nudge now. The law's not enforced. But no one studies the safety, either. People come here to shop, but can they even be sure they're getting what's advertised? And even if they are, no one knows the long-term effects. Keeping it gray leaves it in limbo, makes it sketchy. We gotta pull this stuff up into the light of day, regulate it, test it for safety and quality.
Sam could feel Cade's agreement with Narong's sentiment. She had a different view. Lock them all up and throw away the key. Hold the line. Make it real. Don't let this stuff sweep our humanity away. She kept her opinion to herself. Sam looked down at her own hand, strong beyond any human possibility, reformed by science into a superhuman weapon to better hold the line against superhuman technologies.
And me? Where does the non-human DNA in my cells fit in? Where does the nexus in my brain fit in?
A line from Nietzsche came to her, one Nakamura liked to quote in his more cynical moments.
He who fights too long against dragons becomes a dragon himself. And if you stare too long into the abyss stares also into you.
Here she was, staring into the abyss again. Here she was, fighting dragons. Here she was, part dragon herself. She shook her head to clear the melancholy. She was a soldier. She'd made compromises to protect others. This stuff needed to be kept under control. One raid could clean this place out, she realized. They could round up hundreds of these sellers and buyers in one swoop. And another market would spring up the next day somewhere else. Is there any real solution? They came to the end of the market. Two more enforcers leaned against the walls, deliberately casual, their grotesquely huge muscles sending all the message that was needed. Don't fuck with us. They eyed Narong and Cade and Sam as they passed, made no move to stop them.
That's Suchai,
Narong said.
The party's a few blocks from here. Come on.
Cade turned the things he'd seen in Suchai over in his head as they walked. Narong was right. They'd be safer if these technologies were legalized, regulated, tested for safety. Holtzman's offer came to him unbidden.
You could come work for me here at the ERD, the scientist had offered.
He'd rejected it out of hand, but was there some merit in it? Could he change the system from the inside? Could he help nudge them towards a better way to treat these technologies? Holtzman was a scientist. Surely he wasn't a knee-jerk prohibitionist, too. Cade wandered a maze of choices as Narong led them through the maze of alleys. Watts paced them across the rooftops, leaping lightly from one to the next. No one below looked up to see him. If they had, they would have caught only a faintly darker patch against the dark backdrop of rain and cloud. 23. Buddha's Kiss. The party was in a club in an alley off another unnamed side street off of Soi Samahan. Sam read the name of the place, written in Thai above the door. Jub Fajau. Buddha's Kiss, she mentally translated. An irreverent name in a normally devout society. Faint music and the sounds of voices filtered through. It was a quiet, trendy area, close to the seedy debauchery of the Nana Sex District, close to the illicit fruits of Suchai, but buffered from both. Just the kind of place young, upwardly mobile Thais might choose to party, Sam thought. Narong pressed the button next to the heavy brass door. It cracked open. A muscular Thai bouncer waved them in. Low couches filled the establishment. The walls were painted red and gold, inlaid with Thai script, lotus flowers, Buddhas. Fashionable young Thai and a few foreigners lounged in threes and fours, smiling and talking, holding stylish glasses of clear and colored booze. A trio in the corner smoked scented tobacco out of an elaborate hookah. A bar of bronze and dark wood stretched across one wall, bottles backlit in orange. Sultry, bead-inflected flux grooves filled the space. A DJ stood in the corner, shades over his eyes, oversized headphones on his ears, gently rocking to his own beat as he tapped away on the console before him. Three Thai women in their 20s swayed on the small dance floor before him in short metallic skirts and gold bangles. Narong led them to the bar, spoke in rapid-fire Thai to the bartender. The bartender turned to Cade.
"Do you know DJ Axon?"
he asked over the music and the crowd.
"Yeah,"
Cade raised his voice to be heard. "He's my best friend. We're in school together."
"Well, you bring him here sometime and we'll show him a good time."
The bartender's name was Yindi, and the first round was on him. The drinks were heavy on coconut milk and alcohol, with a hint of lemongrass, and very, very tasty. Narong took them around the club, introducing them to people. Here was Baroma and Lalana, Yama and Zhao, Tonga and Chuan and Rajni. This was Rajni's French friend Pierre. Zuka was from Zimbabwe and worked on the neural basis of morality. Will was very British and on his way to very drunk. Losan was the president of the Thai Neuro...